Welcome to Radio Free America with Will McVeigh the Younger and Jess McVeigh the Elder. I hope Irma is the last hurricane for a while. I'm running out of rain songs.
Listeners to another edition of Radio Free America on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Jess McVeigh, and Will is here as well. Say hello, Will.
Yes, he is. Hello, Will.
Yes, he is. We're doing it a little bit early today because usually I spend the mornings watching the Sunday shows, but all the Sunday shows we're talking about was Irma. Apparently there's some rain and wind down in Florida. Did you hear about that?
So I hear.
Yeah. We're actually supposed to make a little trip down there. The family is supposed to be going down to Florida next week for a wedding, and the wedding is actually going to be on the beach in Clearwater. Except Clearwater,
there may not be a beach in Clearwater by then.
That's right. There may not be a beach in Clearwater, or there may not be a beach house in Clearwater. And if there is, there may not be power to that beach house. So we're toying with the idea that maybe we won't be going down to Florida for a wedding next week. But we'll see. We'll see how they fare. And, you know, I wasn't going to talk about this unless we ran out of time, but let's talk about it first anyhow. I'm sure you haven't seen it because you don't watch, you know, TV news and stuff. You don't have, you know, cable news stuff at your house, and I don't think they've been focusing
on it. I do have cable at my house. I just never, ever watch it.
Oh, I didn't know you had that. I didn't know you had conventional TV.
Yeah, I do. I have conventional TV, and I have, you know, cable that comes with my my internet service, and I fairly deliberately never, ever turn it on.
I didn't know. Like, I thought you did all your stuff through, you know, HBO and Netflix and Hulu and all that. Okay.
I mean, I do use all of that stuff to actually watch television when I watch it, and that's why I don't bother using the TV that I'm paying for. But, you know, when I actually went to sign up for Xfinity, they told me, well, if you get regular internet, then it costs this much. If you get internet and television, it costs less. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess I'll pay less then.
Yeah. It's kind of a no-brainer. Don't ask me how they do that.
Yeah, it's kind of funny to me that basically wired cable television is a loss leader at this point.
I have been watching it, and it's been way over the top. And granted, this is, you know, a Category 4 storm. That's hard science. That's, you know, a fact. And it is headed for, mm-hmm. you know, very populated areas over very warm water and all that. So I get the fact that this is going to be more than just your average storm, but I have to wonder whether the hype is much more than the average hype, even though only slightly more than the average hype is warranted. And not just hype from the news people, but even from government agencies. You know, they're talking about large areas of Florida where the governor is saying, you know, evacuate, mandatory evacuation. He's threatening people. You know, if you're in these areas, we won't be able to help you. You know, you're going to be at the mercy of whatever. And, you know, maybe that's true. I saw one of my Twitter follows put something on his feed this morning to the effect of, let me see if I can find it. It was an interesting thought. Say the damage from Irma in Florida isn't horrendous. Will evacuees think authorities overreacted, or is safety first now a national doctrine? Interesting question. You know, there was a time, say, you know, this is the facts. You know, you want to stay there and ride it out. Well, good luck. If you don't, then we recommend you get out, and that's it. But instead, they're spending all this time trying to convince people about how terrible it is. And even if it's a sincere concern that it might be really, really bad and they want to get people out, we know there's less than certainty about the potential for damage and life loss. What if they overreact, and does that actually create the boy who cried wolf situation so that the next storm that comes along, everybody says, oh, you know, I left my home during Irma because they told me it was going to be so terrible, and, you know, it wasn't, but I got back and, you know, my house had been looted by, you know, criminals because there was nobody on the streets to stop them because everybody had left. So I can't help but wonder, you know, I think we're pretty clear on the fact that the news media are overhyping this. They love this stuff to death. You know, the standard shot with a the journalist, I quote unquote journalist, standing out there in a windstorm and the rain blowing in his face, and he's pointing about, you know, look, there's a fallen tree. Look, there's a sign that's knocked over.
It's funny you should mention that. I'm looking at Facebook. You should mention that I'm looking at Facebook right now, and one of my friends posted, news reporters, don't get in the storm's path. Evacuate now or you'll surely die. Also, news reporters, I'm going to put on a raincoat and go stand in the hurricane for ratings.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously there's a disconnect there, but it's so dangerous.
You're talking about the concern with the boy who cried wolf thing, and I think that that's definitely a concern, but I'm sure what the politicians are thinking when they're making all these announcements is, if it's worse than we think it's going to be and we don't tell people to evacuate, then they're going to blame us for whatever goes wrong.
Yeah.
And feel safer discrediting government institutions than being blamed for anybody being hurt.
I'd be pretty okay with criticizing politicians for covering their ass, but under these circumstances, I can almost understand it. You know, personal story, your grandmother lives in the Villages just north of Orlando, and your aunt was concerned about her living in a stick-built house rather than some of the block-built houses down there, and she was pushing for Grandma to move into one of the shelters. And Mom was kind of agreeing with that, too. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, she's 80-something years old, and she's living by herself, and she's going to pull up stakes and go move to a shelter on her own, as opposed to the other option, which would be have her other daughter who lives down there come stay with her in her existing house and, you know, roll the dice. And I wasn't sure how I felt about that. Talking about, are we overreacting? What's the best course of action? Anyway, she's decided to stay, and I don't blame her. But in the aftermath, you know, we'll only know which was the best choice after the fact. And I pretty much stayed out of the argument because I figured, I don't know. Why not let Grandma make up her own mind? And I guess that's what she did. So I think she probably made the right choice, and that's probably what I would have done. But then, you know, I'm a vigorous 64 years old instead of a fragile 84 or whatever. So anyway, we'll see what happens. We'll keep it. We'll inform you next show how that all turns out. Actually, we may not, because we may not be here for the next show. We may be down in Clearwater at a wedding, or maybe not.
We may also be underwater in Clearwater.
Well, it won't be underwater. We might be standing in water, because, you know, by the time we're down there, you know, it's going to make it through Clearwater by tomorrow. This time, it'll be leaving the area, so we'll know pretty much what's going on in Clearwater tomorrow, or, you know, there's certainly not much later than that. So we'll see what happens. And, you know, at the end of the day, I hope it is kind of exciting. I hope that, you know, there isn't a great loss of life. There's clearly going to be a lot of damage no matter what happens, and that's never a good thing. And then there's a lot of politics that are going to surround that. So I'm sure we're going to talk about
that. Economic stimulation.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another thing I was thinking about when people talk about, you know, we talked about it on the show last week about, is it good for the economy, is it bad for the economy? It depends on who you are. It's going to be great for some people. Mm-hmm. You know, there are going to be some people that do great on this. You know, housing, home builders and roofers and, you know, drywall people, they're going to have a great time. But, you know, there are going to be people that are paying for it. So the truth of the matter is there are going to be winners and losers. And it's kind of like the scene, that which is seen and that which is unseen. So that which you see is, you know, all this economic activity, you know, people making, you know, two or three times their normal salary to hang drywall or shingle roofs. But what you aren't going to see is the poor schlub that's paying three or four times the typical going rate to get that done. You know, Pam Bondi, the Attorney General of Florida, was on television yesterday on Michael Smirkanish's show. I don't like her anyhow, because
I remember her from back in the mortgage crisis days when she refused to prosecute banks that were trying to foreclose on people without having proper title, because that whole MERS thing, Mortgage Electronic Registration System.
But she was on television telling people that she's had, something like 8,400 complaints about price gouging, and her department was going to vigorously prosecute price gougers. On the same show, he had an economist from the University of Indiana, and he was making the case for price gouging in that it brings resources into the area by giving people the incentive, a financial incentive, a profit incentive. And, you know, it made sense to me. And he even said, even in the emergency situation, like, you know, for water, and I was less inclined to accept that. I could see, like, you know, people being hard-pressed, it's a harder sell. And then he made the point that, you know, by raising the price, you prevent people from hoarding. They showed a picture of, you know, somebody with a shopping cart full of bottled water, more bottled water than they're ever likely to need. And, you know, if you're buying more than you're ever likely to need, you're not going to do that if the price is $35 a case instead of $12 a case, or if, as the price goes up.
Yeah.
And that means there'll be more water available for somebody else who needs it, granted at a higher price.
Exactly.
But at least there's more availability. So in that sense, higher prices, what some people call price gouging, is a good idea.
I said something about this last week, too, when we were talking about it, that there's an argument to be made against it for things like emergency supplies, because, I mean, people need them to live. But at the same time, like, that kind of humanitarian aspect of it, like, in an ideal world, that's not something that you legislate. And supply and demand is still going to apply. And as we saw in that particular graphic with the lady carrying a cart full of, you know, cases of bottled water, you know, piled to the point of ridiculous, like, if you don't price gouge emergency supplies like that, you're going to have that sort of thing happening. And you're also not going to provide any sort of incentive for people who are not in the area of the disaster, who have plenty of bottled water, to bring their bottled water into the area where it's needed. So, you know, not only do you have a disconnect between what demand actually is, but you also have a disconnect with the supply side, because the prices are not accurately signaling the conditions of the market at that point.
See, I don't really think that's true. The reason I say it's a harder sell, you know, think about the water, is because when we would say, oh, you know, people won't be incentivized to bring water into the community where it's needed, that's really not true, because we have these huge logistic operations like Walmart. They're not going to price gouge. They're going to charge their usual price, and they're just going to amp up their production and their transportation to get water to the area. So, you know, if it were a more hit-and-miss sort of a logistics situation, that would be true. But, you know, to try to make that sale of the libertarian principle based on water in today's current marketplace, where we've got these great logistics, the argument really does fail in practicality. But where it makes sense, again, is, you know, the stock on hand in the store keeping people from buying way more than they'd ever need, so you have short-term shortages. So we're not talking about long-term shortage, because that's not going to happen, you know, short of nuclear war and all the, you know, electromagnetic pulse and whatnot, and no transportation works anymore. But practically speaking, you know, the effect of raising prices would keep people from over purchasing and hoarding, and then that creating these short-term localized outages. So he made good sense in that regard, and I hadn't thought about that before. Like I said, people say it's a hard sell to make, and the true libertarian will make it anyway, but in reality, the libertarian argument doesn't hold water in this day and age based on, you know, people not wanting to bring water into the area, because Walmart's always going to bring their water in. That's their selling point.
I see your point on that front, but at the same time, it's the short-term shortages that are kind of problematic in the first place. Like, that's kind of what the issue is, and that's why you have that lady, you know, loaded up with cases of water. And I mean, I don't think you can legislate the humanitarian aspect of this, and that, oh, people need water to live. Like, yes, they do, of course they do, but, you know, even the Walmarts of the world have to, you know, adjust how their business works when something like this happens. And I think that they're more likely to be able to survive it if they can, you know, charge an extra dollar for a case of water.
Yeah. You know, the other side of the coin from the price gouging for things like water during the actual crisis is, you know, when it comes time to rebuild, there's going to be an influx of people from all over the country who hang sheetrock and shingle roofs and whatnot. Those people are certainly going to be charging more money than the standard rate, because there's a huge demand. Nobody's going to be talking about price gouging there, because it's going to be, you don't want to pay it? That's fine. I'll go to your neighbor and, you know, see if he'll pay it, because somebody's going to pay it, and then there will be an equilibrium price, and the equilibrium price is going to be higher than it was prior to the crisis. And yet, you know, what are they going to do, legislate that away? If they legislate that away and call it price gouging, you can guarantee that people, well, why am I going to go all the way down to Florida and live in a motel, you know, for 6 months just to get the same wage I can get if I stay here in Indiana? Whereas, you know, if they're looking at, you know, 6 months of working your ass off but getting paid two or three times what you usually pay, you know, a lot of people would say, hey, we're going to have a great Christmas this year because I'm going to work my ass off for 6 months prior, and then I'm going to go home and kick back for a few weeks. That's the way you incentivize people, and that's the way the economy should work. Anyway, that's about all we're going to talk about hurricane related, unless you want to say anything else.
Yeah, let's move on.
The political things that happened this week are having to do with DACA and having to do with the debt ceiling. More specifically, President Trump repealed the executive order on DACA. DACA stands for Delayed Action for Childhood Arrivals. And, it was instituted during the Obama administration, basically promising people who were brought here as children illegally that they weren't going to be deported. In fact, they could even, if they registered and got green cards, they could get, or not even get green cards, but they could get a work permit valid for 2 years and whatnot. And, you know, the people on the right were up in arms basically saying that the president didn't have the constitutional authority to do this. And even the president himself admitted that at first when he just said he wasn't going to do it, and then he changed his mind and he did it anyway. And so the federal government was being threatened with all sorts of lawsuits from attorneys general from Republican states. Of course, Donald Trump campaigned on repealing DACA. He said the first day in office he's going to create a new executive order to repeal it. He never did. Put it off, put it off, put it off. And it's apparent that he was agonizing over the idea because, you know, there is some sympathy to be had for these people who come here as children, no fault of their own, brought by their parents illegally, and now some of them are adults and, you know, productive citizens, and we're going to kick them out of the country and send them back to a country that, you know, they don't know and they don't speak the language. So on the one hand, you'd say that's not really fair to those people in terms of just, you know, being a good human being. On the other hand, if you just say, oh, well, never mind, you're basically incentivizing people to keep doing the same thing because you say, you know, once I can get in, or if I can get my kids in there and get to keep them there long enough, then you know, they're going to be grandfathered in, and I'll have achieved my goal. So on the one hand, you'd say, well, we should kick these people out to show that we mean business and the law is the law. On the other hand, you know, some humanity demands that, you know, you don't do that. So I can see that Trump faced that as a dilemma. I'm a little surprised that the people who are so hardcore against, you know, can't actually recognize, you know, the sympathetic position that some of these kids are in. This is one, this is the perfect story for NPR to report by means of anecdotal evidence. They'll say, oh, we had an interview with, you know, Jose Sanchez here. He's a firefighter and a paramedic, and he saved the lives of all these different people. But he's 21 years old, and he came here when he was 2, and, you know, he doesn't know anything about Mexico, and, you know, they're going to send him back home. Well, you know, how do you defend that if you're a politician, or even if you're just a human being? You know, the two are mutually exclusive. Anyway, so what Trump did was he went ahead and repealed DACA, which now means that these people are subject to deportation, but it doesn't take effect for like 6 months. And he said something to the effect of, you know, so now it's in Congress's court. And, you know, if they don't come up with something, then, you know, then we'll have to revisit the issue, which to me means, okay, Congress, you go ahead and legalize these people. And if you don't, then, you know, I'll revisit the issue. How does he do that? And it just seems like, you know, it's kind of a pathetic effort on his part. He's either for it or he's against it, but he kind of takes this middling, kind of piddling, non-committal approach to it. And I want to start off by both of these issues that we're going to talk about now, this DACA thing and the whole debt ceiling thing. The issue itself isn't what I'm really concerned about, because neither one of these things is an issue that I think is, you know, we really got to defend this ground at all costs. It's just a question of what the hell is Trump thinking? So the bigger
concern
here is...
Yeah, this is supposed to be Mr. Negotiator.
Yeah, yeah. Because the thought was, okay, he will eliminate DACA, and then he'll come back and say, okay, you want to... Congress, you want... Because you've got this huge sympathy for these people, which is, you know, which is deserved, and, you know, most constituencies are not going to punish you if you approve some form of, you know, amnesty for these people. But I want something in return. You know, if you want to put DACA in the next bill that comes my way to sign, as long as it's got some money for my border wall, which I want, and some stronger, you know, enforcement of our immigration laws, I will sign it if it's got some DACA elements in it. So it's like, that would be a negotiation. But instead, he just says, yeah, I'm going to repeal it, and if you guys don't come up with something, well, maybe I'll revisit it later. He doesn't come up, he doesn't say, and, you know, I'm open to negotiations, but this is what I want. Now, maybe that's going on behind the scenes, but, you know, I'm going to presume that it isn't, because, you know, Trump's not the kind of guy that keeps that kind of thing to himself. So I don't understand it. You know, he had another option. He could have very well have just not done anything at all, and then presumably to the courts. And I think all the concern is that Jeff Sessions' Attorney General office would not have defended DACA. That's what happened with same-sex marriage.
DOMA,
yeah. The Obama administration said, we're not going to, you know, when all these lawsuits came in against DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, he says, we're not going to try to defend it. And so it was, you know, defeated, and then we ended up getting same-sex marriage as a result of that. Now, we had it anyway coming in because of the individual states, but the point is the federal government wasn't going to stand in its way. So if Trump was concerned about, you know, didn't want to come down on one side or the other, he could have just done nothing at all. Let the attorneys general sue. The huge consensus was that this was, in fact, unconstitutional, so there was not much concern that, you know, the courts would, you know, everybody was pretty much agreed that the courts would find it unconstitutional and it would have been repealed anyway, mm-hmm. and Trump wouldn't have had to have his hands on it. But instead, he steps in and takes this weird step. So,
well, I think he wanted to have his hands on it because it appeases his base. You can say that he did it. I mean, well, let's keep in mind, too, that his base isn't exactly that clever.
Well, no, I mean, the reaction that I've been seeing is the base is not satisfied with this because he's clearly left the door open to negotiation to bring back amnesty for these guys. For the other issue that's worth noting about DACA is when it was instituted, Obama, one of the things that was required was you had to come in and register and, you know, give information on yourself and declare yourself to be an illegal. And now that it's been repealed, this information is still out there. So people who took advantage of DACA have some reason to be concerned that, oh, the government said I was going to be allowed to stay here if I come in and sign up. So I come in and sign up. Now they're going to use that information to potentially deport me.
That's kind of the concern that a lot of people have with cannabis legalization at the state level is that, you know, if the states legalize cannabis, but the way that they do it is, or medicinal also in particular, and the way that they do it is they require you to register and get a card from a doctor or whatever, and then the federal government decides that they're going to be more diligent in enforcing it, as Jeff Sessions has threatened to be. There's a ready-made database of people who are breaking federal law, you know, ready to go and be persecuted by the federal government for doing so.
My sense is that with DACA, they're not going to do anything. I think this is going to be, you know, now that he's repealed DACA, so now it can be enforced. I think the reality of it is going to be that it won't be enforced. And I have even less concern that, you know, people receiving medicinal marijuana are going to be chased down by the federal government. I just think the politics of that are crazy. And, you know, it sounds good to say that threat is real so that you can make your case. But in reality, I don't think the threat is real. So I mention it because it's been something that people have brought up and discussed, but I personally don't think there's any concern in that regard. We should take a break.
I can't stand the rain against my window, bringing back sweet memories. Hey, when the rain, do you remember how sweet it used to be? When we was together, everything was so grand. Just one sound that I just can't shake.
back to Radio Free America on Blog Talk Radio with your hosts, Will McVeigh the Younger and Jess McVeigh the Elder. If you'd like to join the conversation, call us now at 917-889-3201.
We're back. All right, that was Ann Peebles, and it's called I Can't Stand the Rain. I thought that was appropriate. I'm running out of rain stuff, though, so hopefully we're done with hurricanes. Let's do the calendar. There are two meetings tomorrow, Monday, the 11th of September.
Newcastle County Libertarians didn't want to have their meeting on Labor Day, so they delayed it by a week, and now the Newcastle and Sussex meetings are happening on the same day.
The Newcastle meeting is at the Bear Public Library. I don't remember if it's 6:30 or 7, do you?
It's actually earlier this week or this month because of the changes in the schedule. So I think it's actually taking place at 5:30, if I remember correctly.
Oh, well, okay, we won't be the authority on that. If you're interested in going to that meeting, then you should check it out on Facebook and find out what time, because it may be an earlier time. So thank you for pointing that out.
For sure.
The Sussex meeting will be at Grotto Pizza tomorrow in Seaford, and that is at 7 o'clock. They gather by about 6:30, so you can get there earlier, but the meeting starts at about 7.
Personally, I'm going into the Sussex meeting because it's a much friendlier crowd.
Yeah. We may or may not be back next Sunday, on the 17th, with another edition of Radio Free America. I'll have my computer with me, so there's no reason we can't do a show. But we'll see. If we do, we'll have to do it on the fly, and that's possible. Prices, been a good week for precious metals, up about 1.5%. Been a bad week for Bitcoin, since, you know, talking about Bitcoin a little bit. Bitcoin was down to 41.49 when I checked it just about a half hour ago, and that's a drop of almost 16% in the past week. That's huge. What was that one comment about? You know, Bitcoin's not volatile. 16% in a week. If you're on the wrong side of that, that's pretty volatile. So I don't know what the hell's going on with Bitcoin. That's interesting. But a good week for gold. So I have... significant investment, so I had spent a lot of weeks where I wasn't so happy, but this week I'm happy. Anyway, moving on, what else is on the agenda? Oh, we're going to talk about the debt ceiling. There was going to be an argument about should we raise the debt ceiling? What are we going to get in return for it? You and I know that's always going to be a little bit of a kabuki dance. They always raise the debt ceiling, but the point is that they have to come to Congress and ask permission. And not that we're happy about the kabuki theater, and it doesn't always have to be as much, but the people who have an interest in keeping the debt low and reducing the deficit, it's an opportunity for them to extract a concession. And this time, Trump just basically signed a deal with Pelosi and Schumer that said, we're going to punt this thing until December. In the meantime, there's an unlimited debt ceiling. You know, you spend as much as you want, and we'll revisit it in December. And what do we get for that concession? Nothing. Trump could have said, you know, and in response, I want some sort of a deal on Obamacare, or I want some sort of a deal on the upcoming tax reform. But instead, he gets nothing, and we revisit this whole thing in December. I suspect that the closer you get to the election, the less likely people are to threaten a government shutdown in order to get what they want. So, you know, basically, if you have a concern about too much debt and rising deficits, this was not a good week for you in terms of Trump just abandoning the whole debt ceiling thing. As I said, in reality, it was all going to be for show anyhow. There wasn't much going to come out of it, but what little there could have been coming out of it, that's not going to happen anymore. So there's reasons to be disappointed if you're a Republican or a Libertarian in this case. If you're Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer, you have reasons to be elated because you basically rolled the president. Mr. Negotiator here caved in on an issue for you and got nothing in return. And, in the process, abandoned his supposed base, you know, abandoned his team, the Republicans, and came down on your side. So you end up looking good if you're Pelosi or Schumer, and the president looks stupid, and the Republicans, especially Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan, probably look the stupidest of all.
Yeah.
So I think that's significant. Not so much for the debt ceiling issue itself, but for the bigger picture of what the hell is the president playing at. You know, people were always concerned that he wasn't really a conservative, in terms of libertarian concerns, that he wasn't really a fiscal conservative, which is the part of conservatism that we care about. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, if he's dealing with Schumer and Pelosi at all, he's probably dealing with them in terms of infrastructure programs, which means more debt, more unpaid for projects from the federal government, more boondoggles, more wasted money.
And more spoon ready projects.
So not a good week for Republicans. It's a week that I think showed Trump to be less than the genius negotiator that he claims to be. And it's kind of fallen into the background, not getting as much attention as it might otherwise get because all the news media want to talk about is hurricanes. Anyway, that's about all I've got to say. I don't know. Is there anything else you want to talk about? We're going to end the show early if you don't.
Not especially, no.
All right. Well, I don't have a problem with quitting a little early. I kind of anticipated that would be the case. So we'll talk to you next week, maybe, or maybe not.
Yep.
Into each life some rain must fall, but too much is falling in mine. Into each heart some tears must fall, but someday the sun will shine. Some folks can lose the blues in their hearts, but when I think of you, another shower starts. Into each life some rain must fall, but too much is falling in mine.